We are the Mystery History Podcast. I'm Allison.
I'm Rachel.
Welcome to episode 159 on the Golden State Killer Part 1.
Part 1 of potentially many.
There could be several. We don't know yet.
We'll know next week.
We will. If it's another part 2 or if there's part 3 coming. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, hard to say at this point.
Before we get into it, we got a few business items. We want to tell you about our new merch that's located on TeePublic. The easiest way to find it is go to teepublic.com and search for MHP. That will bring you to our logos, and then you can pick any color, any size, any style you want and make whatever shirt you desire, or sweatshirt, or tank top. Yep. Who knows?
We're getting into fall season, but we needed a tank top today.
Yes, because it was freaking 97 degrees outside, which is stupid.
Rough.
So yes, go there and search. We will have the link to it in the show notes if you're interested. And t-shirts are like $22, any style. We do have tie-dye, and it looks bitchin'.
Super bitchin'.
Do people still say that?
We say that.
Hell yeah, we do. Because it's true. And we would love to see you in our the merch whenever you purchase. So the way that this is set up, we don't know whenever who buys. So if you do, please send
us your picture.
We'll put it on the page. You'll be famous.
Sure will. And if you don't want us to put it on there, you can tell us, but still send us a picture. Because it makes us happy.
It really does. It's the little things.
Little things.
Okay, episode suggestions. We are trying to get everything together for the rest of October and November and December and all the other months after that.
Poor Jamie. I just realized after this one, do we even have anything like listed out in preparation as far as?
We're terrible.
We are. All right.
She loves us so much.
Last chance for episode suggestions in October and probably November.
Yes, that's what we'd like to do.
Get them to us right now.
Right now. If you want to see something, if you heard of something spooky, somebody murdered somebody and you want to know more about it or our take on it, send it to us.
Please.
Please. The next thing, our Tiki Talk. As the kids like to say, we got one, and I post little snippies of our episodes on there. I would like to post other things. We're getting there. Slow but steady. Follow us at Mystery History Pod on TikTok.
By the time we figure out how to do TikTok, it is not going to be cool anymore.
No.
Cool now? I don't even know.
There's probably something else out there that we don't know about that we're going to have to take a class on how to operate.
Probably. Well, but
we're trying
we'll get there
to keep
one day.
Times. Yeah. Yeah. After it's like, cause Facebook, I'm very proficient at Facebook, but no young kids do Facebook anymore.
Yeah. I'm mostly only doing Instagram at this point.
Yeah, I know how to work Instagram too, but TikTok still, there's some mysteries there left to be.
Yeah, seen. For sure. For sure.
But we're trying. So go follow us. It would make our heart happy.
It would. Maybe if we had more followers on TikTok, we would actually figure it out.
That's true.
For you guys.
We would do it for you.
We sure would.
And we love a good guilt trip. So if that's what you need to go follow us, that's what we'll do.
Mm-hmm. No shame. No shameless. Shame.
Okay. Well, I think that's all the business.
I think so too.
All right. Why don't you get us started on this situation?
All right. So the situation all started on March 19th, 1974. $50 comprised of coins were stolen from a piggy bank, and things escalated from there. Wow. Starting small, all crime starts somewhere.
Piggy banks.
That's right.
This isn't where I thought we'd start.
We're starting at the very beginning.
Okay.
Incidents were occurring in Visalia, California, and eventually these incidents were attributed to the Visalia Ransacker. The Ransacker was breaking into people's homes and doing things like rifling through their stuff, vandalizing the owner's possessions, scattering bras and undies, and stealing lower value items while leaving cash and higher valued items that were in plain sight alone. What would you do if you, like, hold on, I think this has happened to you, if you like went into your room you went into your room and your underwear and bras were like about. That did happen to you.
That did
I forgot
happen.
About that. However, we knew exactly who did it. So,
correct.
But like, if you didn't know who did it, wouldn't that freak you out? I mean, it freaked you out knowing who did it too. But
that's what I was going to say. It freaked me out just as much. I feel like maybe more so that I knew. But
it was responsible.
Yeah. When I didn't know 100,000,000%, but I had an inkling.
Oh,
and I
yes,
still
we
believe.
Did. Yes, yeah. We did. Who else could it possibly have been?
Yeah, but I will tell you, it is very unsettling whenever you have something that's like your safe zone and it's been defiled.
In it. Yeah. And I just feel like I would be extra. I feel like it would be an added layer that it would be like your bras and underwear.
Right, because that's private.
Ooh, that is private.
And you need the thing is, the matter is that you're supposed to be safe at home, right? So if you go outside to get the mail and there's somebody standing on the street, is that the person? Like, everybody's a suspect. You just don't feel safe anymore.
Yeah. So this guy was out here unsettling everyone. The ransacker was emptying piggy banks and coin jars. And stole things like blue chip stamps, which I did not know what those were. Do you know what those are?
No.
It's a type of like loyalty program that I guess stores used back in the day. So you would get stamps and like put the stamps on your little card. And after you got so many, I think you would get like percentages off or you get something. So kind
like
of like how places still do like, yeah.
Like
yeah,
stamps.
In the coffee place down the street. Yeah, you get like a free thing after you get 10 or whatever. So kind of like that. But those were getting stolen, which is very odd, right?
Yeah.
Some foreign and historic coins, which sounds expensive to me. And personal items like single earrings.
Oh, that's
which
just
would
maddening.
Really piss me off. Yeah, that would make me very angry. Cufflinks, rings, medallions, those kind of things. Weapons were also stolen. There were 6 weapons and various ammunition stolen during that time. And it happened that same day burglaries occurred, like with some frequency during this time span where everybody was getting ransacked. And on November 30th, 1974, there were 12 incidents documented.
Wow. I don't like doing anything 12 times.
I know. That would be exhausting.
Absolutely. Wow. He's got some stamina.
Right?
There were other characteristics in common between those burglaries. Fences were climbed, attempts to pry open multiple points of entry, like lots of windows and doors, leaving multiple points of escapes open. That's kind of smart.
Yeah, so I don't know what the deal was with that. Like, they were prying multiple things open and then leaving them all open. I don't know if it was to, like, elude people of which way they exited.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it was, you know, keeping them open so if something happened, they could get out. Maybe
that's
both.
That's where my mind went, was that if, like, somebody came home, they would have several
options
ready.
Yeah. Yeah.
Putting the window screens that were removed into bedrooms or on the beds, setting up warning systems by doing things like placing dishes or bottles against doors or on handles. So if they move, they would fall. And that's like takes time.
Yeah. Which means that he's like spending time in these places.
Mm. and always wearing gloves and therefore not leaving fingerprint evidence. Over the course of 20 months, 120 homes were burglarized or ransacked in the area, and eventually the same person would be found to have been the, what is it?
Vesalia
ransacker, the Cordova cat burglar, and the exterior ransacker.
Exeter, which is a place.
Okay.
So that's, all these like, three different places.
And I don't like the word ransacker. I like the word ransack.
Yeah.
Ransacker's too much.
And when I was doing these notes, I feel like I don't. Have you heard the word like somebody described as a ransacker before? When I was doing this, I was like, I don't think I've ever like read the word ransacker before.
No, I feel like in our notes, it's not liking it. So I don't think it's really a word.
What do you mean it's not liking it?
Like it's saying that it's not like you want to pick a different word because it's not spelled correctly.
Oh, it's like underlined?
Yeah.
Why do my notes not do that? I don't have that turned on in here for it to like correct me. You're going to have to show me how to turn that on later.
I need it so you know what I'm saying.
Right. It would help me too. So yeah, I just don't think I'd ever heard that word before. And apparently it's not a word. So there's that. But that's
really
what
I don't think it is.
That's what these people were called. So,
and that means that so many burglaries were occurring, they thought it was multiple perpetrators. Because, 20 months, mm-hmm. 120 homes, 12 in a day, you've got to be like, they got accomplices. This is a ring of ransackers.
And it's like multiple areas, too. So, yeah, they're like, oh, it must be different people.
Wow.
I don't know. On September 11th, 1975, someone broke into Claude Snelling's home. Claude was a 45-year-old professor at the College of the Sequoias. And about 9 months prior to this, in February, he had chased a prowler away from his 16-year-old daughter Beth's window. Uh-oh. He woke up around 2 a.m. because of some noises that he heard. He got out of bed and made his way out of the already open back door of his home and found a ski-masked intruder in his carport attempting to kidnap Beth.
Holy cow.
And he was attempting to kidnap her and get her to go out quietly by threatening her with, like, violence, guns.
Never go quietly.
Like that. Right. Claude was shot by the intruder twice. And he staggered back into his house and to his wife. He later passed away from the gunshot wounds. After the intruder shot Claude, he ran away. And at a different address, I couldn't really understand this, but at a different address, I believe they found a stolen bike that was left behind. I think that they believe he took to get away.
So
like,
are
that's
we
how he
about
got away.
Like a bicycle?
Yes.
Wow.
Like a children's bicycle. Maybe not a child's bicycle, but
yeah,
yes. A thing
like
children ride. Yeah.
Tassels hard blowing in the wind. Wow, that's awful. Right. That's terrifying, all of that.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah, it's not great. And two, I don't know if this already had started, but one of the websites that I used is the GoldenStateKiller.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it dictates on their, like, sightings of, like, reports of seeing somebody, like, prowling in a yard or, like, doing all these things that they believe were the Golden State Killer during the burglaries, during what we escalate into later, all of those things. So he's, like, being seen by people, and there are a lot of, like, composite sketches.
Mm-hmm.
That are available, and he does not always look the same.
Isn't that wild? We had that. Yeah. What was that other one where there was like he wore a beard, and there was it was
yeah,
not close.
And they didn't
None
even
of them.
Look close. Yeah, yeah, not even close. So
at this time, the Vesalia police committed more resources to finding the ransacker. setting up nighttime stakeouts and offering a $4,000 reward. Beth was put under hypnosis and attempts to get more information from her. And on December 12th, 1975, at 8:30 p.m., a masked man came into the backyard of a home on Kauai Avenue, which is near where the Visalia ransacker had been hitting with frequency. Detective William McGowan was on the stakeout inside the garage and attempted to detain the masked man. He fired a warning shot and the suspect screamed, removed his mask, and pretended to surrender before taking off and jumping over the fence into another yard. He also pulled out a revolver with his left hand at that time and fired at the detective, and this shot shattered the detective's flashlight. Whoa. Whoa. Mm. Could you imagine holding a flashlight and it exploding because somebody shot it?
I would pee my pants.
I would pee my pants.
Sure.
Oh my God. Officers nearby came to aid the detective, but the man had escaped. They were able to collect the following evidence: a tennis shoe tracks, you know, in the mud or whatever, the flashlight, a sock full of coins, and blue chip stamps, which we talked about earlier. He likes these blue chip stamps. He
really likes those blue chip stamps. Very strange. And he was carrying around a sock full of coins.
To hit people with, or like for spending money?
I don't know if those are like the coins he stole from piggy banks and he carries them around in socks. I don't know. Or as a weapon. Hard to say. Couldn't tell you. But yeah, that was their like big chance, in my opinion, here, because they were staking out. There were other police officers nearby. Like, very unfortunate that right there wasn't the end of things.
But fortunate that the shot hit the flashlight
and not the detective. Oh. Yeah, for sure.
I will have anxiety about that for days.
In 1976, so that was December 12th, 1975, we're now moving into 1976, 215 miles away from Visalia, California, in Sacramento, the residents were starting to be terrorized by a stalker. The stalker stuck to middle-class neighborhoods at night and seemed to be looking for women. He targeted women that were alone in one-story homes, oftentimes near a school, a creek, trail, or other open space that would provide a quick escape route, but also not make it to where he would be seen by a lot of people. The stalker was seen lots of times still, but always got away. Once while he was being pursued, he shot and seriously injured his pursuer, which was a young man. This stalker started raping women and eventually was dubbed the East Area Rapist. Police believed that he would peep in through windows and prowl through yards to choose his next target. Oftentimes, his victims heard him on their property before being attacked.
Ugh.
So they could basically like hear him coming.
Yeah.
And I think with that, there were times where they heard things and then he came back later, like a different day, and attacked them. So it's believed that he sometimes entered the homes he had selected prior to the attack, and he would unlock windows, unload people's guns, and plant ligatures for later use. He would also start calling his future victims. Sometimes he would call them for months in advance and would learn their daily routines. So he was calling people before he would attack them.
That is okay. If you heard somebody coming and you grabbed your gun.
Oh my God, I know, right?
And it wasn't no freaking loaded. Bullets. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be awful.
And this is more than just like what he's doing. This is a psychological game that he's playing with these poor women, calling them for months in advance. And what can you do? Like, move? I mean, what can you do?
And I don't even think a lot of times, as far as I know, I don't think he was necessarily threatening them. He was just like calling and hanging up.
Yeah. Or breathing creepily.
Yeah, I believe that's what was happening during that time. So, yeah. I mean, what are you going to do? You can't do anything.
No.
And also, can you, like, I think about, like, he was going into people's houses and unlocking the windows for himself. Like, thinking about your own home, you lock all the windows, but you don't check that all the windows are locked all the time because you locked them before. They should still be locked.
Yeah. Oh, that's just creepy. Somebody being in your house without you knowing.
Mm-hmm. And if you did find one of your windows unlocked.
Oh.
I mean, you wouldn't think probably like, oh my gosh, somebody was in here and unlocked it. I would probably think my husband or my children did it or something.
Right. Or maybe I forgot to lock that one or something.
Yeah. But if you lived alone,
ooh,
I don't know. That would put a seed in your brain.
Ugh. At first, he was targeting women that lived alone or with only children, but eventually he started attacking couples, and he came to prefer couples. It is thought he switched up when the media was claiming he only attacked single women. And he's like, no, 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 I'm going to show you by attacking mm-hmm. couples. Typically, when attacking a couple, he would sneak in the home through a window or a sliding glass door and wake up the couple with a flashlight and would threaten them with a handgun. I can't even imagine how, like, disoriented.
Terrifying. Yeah.
You would be.
You really would be super disoriented with, yeah, like, out of flashlight in your eyes.
Yeah. They were then bound, oftentimes with shoelaces that were found at the scene or brought with him. Blindfolded and gagged with towels he tore up into strips. He made the women tie up her partner before she was tied up. He would then separate them and would stack dishes on the man's back, saying he would kill everyone in the house if he heard them rattle. He would then take the woman to another room and rape her, usually multiple times.
Put dishes on the men's backs.
I don't know if I could just do that in normal circumstances, but sometimes, like, whenever you're really scared, have you ever, like, shaken uncontrollably and, like, you can't mm-hmm. stop it?
Yeah.
That would be me, and I'd be rattling the hell out of them dishes, and they'd probably fall. Right.
Probably. They probably would. So these were not quick attacks that were occurring here. He would sometimes spend hours in the home going through their things, eating their food, drinking their beer, and coming back over to rape the women. So he was hanging out, basically. Mm-hmm. He would steal personal items and mostly low value items, but sometimes would take cash and firearms. Some of his victims stated they thought that he had left the home. And then he would jump out, like, quote, jump out of the darkness.
What?
Like, what the F? They would think he was gone, and then he'd be like, nope, still here.
Oh, my God.
And when he would leave, he would sneak off quietly, which would leave his victims, like all of them, unsure if he had actually gone or not.
Right.
It is believed he would go through their yards, creeks, trails, etc. Like we talked about before, escape routes that he could get out quickly and through, but maybe a lot of people wouldn't be watching or seeing him go through those ways. He wasn't just walking down the street. And then at some point after he had gone down the creeks, the yards, it was thought that he would eventually get to a bike or a car that he had left and would get home that way.
Wow.
So getting far enough away from the scene of the crime that people were not like out looking, like looking out for him, you know, or would say like, oh, I saw a man when I was across the street, whatever. You know what I mean?
I'm just really stuck on the jumping out of the darkness.
I know. Me too. Like you haven't done enough damage. It's like a game.
Well, and what? So they would get themselves loose, I would assume, and then like be probably trying to get to a phone to call 911. And then he would just pop. I mean, how is your reflex not to just pop him in the freaking mouth? Like, I don't.
Right.
You would be so on it. Like, that just is so messed up.
Mm-hmm.
So crazy. Oh, my God. Okay. The East Area Rapist terrorized Sacramento from June 18th, 1976 through May 28th, 1977. So almost a year. 23 attacks. Yeah, for just this section. So 23 attacks in total during that time. Then for 3 months, there was peace before he struck 51 miles away in San
Joaquin County.
Joaquin. You know, I struggle with this.
I sure
county.
Do.
On September 6th, 19... We just talked about this in 1977.
We did just talk about Joaquin Phoenix. Like, was that the last episode? Like, the Patreon?
Yeah, that was our Patreon. We were talking about Napoleon and how this character...
You were trying to tell me who played him, and you're like...
Joaquin.
Joaquin or something. Like, who?
Still, I'm very unsure, so I don't like to say it.
Okay, well, it's San Joaquin.
What?
I probably just... I can't. Actually, I can't say it now.
I ruined you. How do you say it?
I don't know anymore.
San Jay. That's what we're going with. Hopefully, there's not a lot of attacks here because we can't say it. But it was there.
Woo.
Woo. Then 6 attacks in Sacramento before October and January 1978. Between. I'm a mess. March 18th, 1978 through July 5th, 1979, there were 20 attacks in varying locations, including Sacramento, San Jay, Yolo, Stan, who makes up these freaking names? Stanislaus, Contra Costa, and Santa Clara, and Almedia. California.
Alameda.
What did I say?
Almedia?
Yeah, that works. I know
Alameda.
Santa Clara. You know what that's from?
No.
The Lost Boys.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's a place that I've heard of before.
Yeah, that's where Lost Boys was.
Love it.
I just wish they could stick in Sacramento because I know how to say that one real well.
Yeah, you do.
There were 50 total attacks over those 3 years and all those and all that
places. Yeah. It's a lot.
We're on the same wavelength. That
we
is,
sure are.
That is quite a few.
Too many.
Definitely.
Any is too many, but stop it.
Yeah, like, get tired. What are you doing?
Right?
What kind of vitamins does this guy take? I mean, I'm tired just talking about it.
Right? No, he's a mess. In December 1977, so while this was going on, someone claiming to be the East Area Rapist sent a poem to the Sacramento Bee, the Sacramento mayor's office, and the television station KVIE. And we're going to read that poem for you right now.
Ooh, read it.
It's called Excitement's Crave.
Gross.
Disgusting. I don't like it.
I don't like it either. I don't like the way this is starting.
I don't. All right. All those mortals surviving birth upon facing maturity take inventory of their worth to prevailing society. Choosing values becomes a task. Oneself must seek satisfaction. The selected route will unmask character when plans take action. Accepting some work to perform at fixed pay but promise for more is a recognized social norm, as is decorum seeking lore. Achieving while others lifting should be cause for deserving fame. Leisure tempts excitement seeking. What's right and expected seems tame. Jesse James has been seen by all, and Son of Sam has an author. Others now feel temptation's call. Sacramento should make me an offer. To make a movie of my life, that will pay for my planned exile. Just now I'd like to add the wife of a mafia lord to my file. Your East Area rapist and deserving pest. See you in the press or on TV.
I don't really like poems.
I feel like it started off okay and then just really went off the rails, in my opinion.
I just don't get it.
Like, he got real lazy. I don't really get it either.
I mean, poems in general, I don't really get it. Like, I feel like it's just a bunch of words.
I get poems and I like poems, but yeah, I don't know. I don't really know what he was trying to convey there.
Hmm. Pretty ballsy, though, to send it to the mayor's office.
Mm-hmm. Sending it all over town. It's like this guy wants to get caught.
We've seen this before with like the BTK.
Yep.
December 9th, 1978, during the investigation of the 42nd attack, three sheets of paper were found near where a suspicious vehicle had reportedly been. What's the suspicious vehicle look like?
So there was an attack and somebody was like, hey, I saw this car over here, and they were like investigating that. The car was no longer there, but they found paper on the ground near where this car was. And they believe that these pages were dropped, not on purpose.
I see. Okay. The first page found contained what appeared to be a homework essay on General George Armstrong Custer. The second was a journal type entry that I am going to read for you now. Mad is the word that reminds me of sixth grade. I hated that year.
Everybody
I wish I had known what was going to be going during my sixth grade year, the last and worst year of elementary school. Mad is the word that remains in my head about my dreadful year at sixth grade. My madness was one that was caused by disappointments that hurt me very much. Disappointments from my teacher, such as field trips that were planned, then canceled. My sixth grade teacher gave me a lot of disappointments, which made me very mad and made me build a state of hatred in my heart. No one ever let me down that hard before, and I have never hated anyone as much as I did him. Jesus!
Right?
They are pissed! Disappointment wasn't the only reason that made me mad in my sixth grade class. Another was getting in trouble at school, especially talking. That's what really bugged me, was writing sentences. Those awful sentences that my teacher made me write hours and hours. I'd sit and write 50, 100, 150 sentences a day. At night, I wrote those dreadful paragraphs, which embarrassed me. And more important, it made me ashamed of myself, which in turn, deep down inside, made me realize that writing sentences wasn't fair. It wasn't fair to make me suffer like that. It just wasn't fair to make me sit and write until my bones ached, until my hand felt very horrid pain it had ever had as I wrote. I got madder and madder until I cried. I cried because I was ashamed. I cried because I was disgusted. I cried because I was mad. I cried for myself. Kid who kept on having to write those dang sentences. My angriness from sixth grade will scar my memory for life, and I will be ashamed for my sixth grade year forever. What?
What? And why?
Well, Jesus, he didn't mind writing this many sentences together.
Word. And like, as an adult, remember? Writing that out, like, I don't know.
Do you remember what happened in sixth grade? I'm sure I hated it, but I don't remember anything that disappointed me this much. Maybe in my whole entire life.
I don't remember a single thing from sixth grade, now that we're talking about it. Who were our teachers in sixth grade?
I couldn't tell you.
Was it the sisters?
I was in a trailer. I was outside in a trailer. I remember that.
Was that sixth grade?
Yeah, I think
The trailer times?
The trailer times.
Oh, okay. Now I remember a little bit.
didn't have enough space for all the kids, so they bought these like double wide trailers and stuck them outside. Now I will say they were very nice trailers, and
yeah,
I preferred it because they had air condition that the teachers could control, and my teacher ran hot, so it was always cold in there, which I liked.
I don't really remember the air conditioned situation, and I feel like I don't even really remember having to walk outside like during winter to get to them. They must have shoveled really well. Did they shovel really well?
Yeah, we didn't have to walk through snow. It was all paved.
Yeah, I remember it being paved. I just didn't remember. Like, I figured if it was really cold out and snowy, I would remember that, but I guess not.
I always like to go outside because I was like, maybe I could escape. And
just take off running into the woods. You would freaking never. You would, I would never. I would have done that. You would never.
Never. I would be too afraid. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's pissed about sentences and
super pissed. I don't know.
Mm.
And on the third piece of paper that they found, there was a hand-drawn map of what appeared to be a suburban neighborhood and the word punishment across the backside. And this map, they decided that they didn't know where it was depicting
the neighborhood.
Yeah, that was hand-drawn. And eventually, I believe they came to the conclusion that it was like an imaginary neighborhood that was like ideal, like his ideal suburban neighborhood to attack.
Oh.
And I don't, like, those three things are just so bizarre to me.
Or maybe he's just a terrible artist. Like, he's a terrible poem writer and a sentence writer. Because did you write this or did you...
I copied this. I clipped it. Holy crap. The spelling is wrong and it's like a run-on sentence.
Oh, it's terrible. I mean, so much. Yeah. So many red lines.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, wow. He's just terrible at a lot of things.
Yeah. It's just not great. During these attacks, there were also phone calls received on, and we're going to hit those phone calls, at least the ones that were reported and identified. On March 18th, 1977, the Sacramento County Sheriff's Office received three calls from a man claiming to be the East Area Rapist. None of those calls were recorded. The first two, which is weird. Wouldn't you think that they would be recording like all calls that come into the sheriff's office?
You would think.
Maybe not.
If they don't, I don't know.
I don't know either.
You could call a call center and it'll tell you it's on a recorded line. I mean, Jesus, the sheriff's office can't do that.
Right? You would think. The first two calls received at 4:15 and 4:30 p.m. were identical and ended with the caller laughing and hanging up. The final call came in at 5 p.m. with the caller saying, "I'm the East Side Rapist and I have my next victim already stalked and you guys can't catch me."
Straight to the point.
Very straight to the point. Not cool. On December 2nd, 1977, a man claiming to be the rapist called the Sacramento Police Department saying, "You're never going to catch me, East Area Rapist, you dumb fuckers. I'm going to fuck again tonight. Be careful." The call was recorded and later released. As with the previous call, the next victim was attacked that night.
Wow.
So he went lying.
Yeah. December 9th, 1977, during the 1977 Christmas season, a previous victim received a phone call that she attributed to her attacker. The caller said, "Merry Christmas, it's me again."
What an asshole.
And it's not even close to Christmas.
No.
Idiot. December 10th, 1977, shortly before 10 p.m. on December 10th,
again, sorry,
1977, Sacramento. We just needed to drill the point home on the date.
It was December 10th.
Sacramento authorities received two identical calls saying, "I'm going to hit tonight, Watt Avenue." Both were recorded and the caller was identified as the same person who placed the call on December 2nd. Law enforcement patrols were increased that night, and at 2:30 a.m., a masked man eluded officers after being seen bicycling on the Watt Avenue Bridge. When spotted again at 4:30 a.m., he discarded the bike and fled on foot. The bicycle had been stolen. So, I mean, at least I will say they're trying with the patrolling. Yes. Like, that's great. I just got to say, we shit on the police and their investigations a lot, but like, good for you. You're trying do them.
Yeah. And this is in like two different areas. So like when they were doing like the night stakeouts and stuff, that was in Visalia, way far away for those robberies. And then they're doing the groundwork here. It sounds like they're on the streets trying to make things happen, sending people out, taking the call seriously, you know?
And it just sucks that it seems like they've come so close a few times and they just can't get them.
The police are seeing him. Like, he has been seen, but is still just getting away there. I want to back up to the Merry Christmas, It's Me Again. Could you imagine?
No.
Being raped and then getting a phone call later from the person that did it. And not knowing who that person was and knowing they're still out there. Like, that is just psychological mind games. It's just terrible. Absolutely. I hate that.
I hate that too. Because you know that voice. She's never going to forget the voice ever.
Yeah.
And as soon as she picked up the phone to ruin Christmas, why?
Like, yeah, leave her alone. Then the first known rape victim received a wrong number call asking for Ray on January 2nd, 1978. The call was recorded, which is weird that they were recording their calls. I don't know why they were recording their calls.
The victim's phone, right?
The first known rape victim, was recording the call. I wonder if at this point there had been enough other phone calls that they were having people record their phone calls.
Maybe just like they did it with a tape recorder or something.
Yeah, I don't know. So the call was recorded and police suspect that it may have been the same caller who made a threatening call to her later that evening. That call came in later. They think the first person asking for Ray was the person that called later.
Okay.
So she was just recording her phone calls.
Yeah.
So later that evening, she got a threatening call. That call was also recorded and identified by the victim as the voice of her assailant. The caller said, "Gonna kill you, gonna kill you, gonna kill you, bitch, 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 fucking whore."
Wow.
Gonna kill you?
No, I don't like it.
I don't like it either. And I feel like a lot of times, like, dude, getting raped is worse enough. Leave these people alone. And thank goodness, normally, if you get raped, you are left alone after that, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're already messed up, scared of people, scared of everything. The person's still out there. You don't know who they are. And then to get phone calls, that would totally send me straight over the edge.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't be able to probably live by myself after that.
I would, like, yeah, I would be non-functioning.
No, I wouldn't answer the damn phone.
That's for sure. I would not have a phone.
No, nobody needs to call me.
Or I would have a phone with a number that nobody knows. Right. I guess you would need a phone because I also wouldn't want to be at home with no phone and somebody like break in. So that's I don't know.
January 6th, 1978, a man claiming to be the East Area Rapist called the Contact Counseling Service and said, "I have a problem. I need help because I don't want to do this anymore." After a short conversation, the caller said, "I believe you are tracing this call," and hung up. Yeah. I hope they were tracing it.
They should have been tracing it.
Yeah. Obviously, he needs lots of help.
I don't think they were tracing it, though.
I don't think so either. But they should have been. I guess whenever you're calling like a counseling place, it's supposed to be
counseling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, February 2nd, 1978, 21-year-old Brian Maggiore, a military policeman at Mather Air Force Base, and his 20-year-old wife, Katie Maggiore, were walking their dog in Rancho Cordova, which is located in Sacramento County and near some of the East Area Rapist attacks, which sounds like there were so many attacks, probably everywhere was near an attack.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a confrontation on the street, and Brian was shot. Brian and Katie ran, but they were chased down by a man, and they were both shot to death.
Oh, my God.
It was suspected that the East Area Rapist may be to blame because of the location of the attack.
Wow.
And I think that that is the first purposeful kill of this person.
Uh-huh. Wow. Just walking your dog.
Mm-hmm.
That's so scary.
On my birthday, too.
Yeah.
It's Groundhog's Day. It's a national holiday.
It is. Nobody should die on Groundhog's Day.
Absolutely not. Wow, so, yeah, that's awful. Were just walking and minding their own business. And that is just so, like, that's out of the realm of what he was doing before.
Mm-hmm.
But really, that is how things are escalating. Like, the burglaries, he did that for a long time.
Yeah.
It was excessive and ridiculous. But he did that for a long time. And then all of a sudden, decided to start raping people.
Yeah.
Usually it's just a very slow progression. It's like years, and it's like years of nonstop, very busy
mm-hmm.
breaking the law stuff. And I feel like usually it's like a little firework, you know, like they start being real bad and it's like, zoom.
Yeah. Well, they start feeling like they're invincible, essentially, right? So after you do so many, you're like, they haven't caught me. I've seen lots of cops. Nobody's got me. I can escalate now.
But they're not doing like 120 burglaries,
right.
50 rapes,
right.
and then moving on to murder. Like, that's not the scene.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just weird. And then I don't think, I mean, who knows, but I don't think he was trying to kill the first person he killed, the Claude,
uh-huh.
the dad. I do also think it's weird, though, that he was trying to steal the daughter, the 16-year-old daughter, because that also did not fit his normal, like, situation.
Well, where was he going to take her? Did he have a car in that one, or was it a bicycle? Because it was a bicycle, wasn't it?
I think it was a bicycle, yeah, if I remember correctly from the notes before that we just freaking read. Didn't they find the bike at a different address?
Right. So how are you going to steal someone on a bike?
I don't know.
I need to see what that looks like, because I can't picture it. If somebody was like, hey, girl, get on this Huffy, I'm stealing you. Like, where the hell? Even if I like wanted to try to comply, where am I going to fit on this thing? Nowhere.
I don't know. And maybe he wasn't going to take the bike. Maybe he was going to walk her out. But like, that's also
very ballsy.
Yeah. And like, was he not intending to take her? I don't know. I have questions about that one because it's weird and like
it's
out
so
of
weird.
Place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I don't know. But that is our part one of the Golden State Killer.
Yes.
And we're going to move on to the murders that occurred after this point. And we're going to talk about how this bro got caught. And then we're going to talk about who he is.
Right.
So
that's that.
Two or three parts to follow.
We're still
in part two and three. We'll see.
Well, and there is a book that was very popular a few years ago called I'll Be Gone mm-hmm. in the Dark by Michelle McNamara, Patton Oswalt's widow.
Deceased wife.
Yeah. And I don't think I ever finished it. I feel like I got like 75%. It's very much like her research, which she did really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
But I did watch, there is a HBO documentary that you can watch called I'll Be Gone in the Dark. And it's just about like her obsession with it, because it is crazy. I could definitely see how you would get obsessed with this case, because there's so much. And it just like you said, with the escalation mm-hmm. and it's It's weird. It's just weird.
And there's they have lot. Evidence. Like, there's evidence and sightings and,
yeah,
you know, yeah. There's stuff there. It's not like there was nothing to go off of. So, and he wasn't caught for so long.
Yes. So long. They're lucky they caught him while he was still alive.
Yeah, while he was alive. Yeah. And this a-hole's like making phone calls to people and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like he's hiding out somewhere.
Right.
I don't know. So we'll get into all of that next episode. So yeah, come back, please. Yeah.
You want to say your sources?
Oh yeah, I guess I could probably do that. I used abcnews.go.com, wikipedia.com, goldenstatekiller.com, and latimes.com. And I think I mentioned the goldenstatekiller.com website is intense.
Lots like, of information.
Yes. And like links to link, like it's all linked into the same website. It's all like whoever did this is stuff, but there's just a lot. And there is a section of it that's down right now that I feel like would have been really helpful for my notes.
Yeah.
And I think it was like the section that gave detail to the crimes that were committed, which is really what this section of the notes was about. But they had taken it down. I don't know if they were like updating it or what was going on, but because of the case of him being in trial, it was being like reworked. So I don't know if they're going to come back to it or not, but that website has a lot of information on it. If you want to check that out.
Okay. Well, we hope you enjoyed episode 159 on the Golden State Killer Part 1. We hope you have a fantastic week, and we will see you next time.
Bye.